it's a very fine line to play a character who is basically a curmudgeon, but you want the audience to like her. Mm-hmm. You don't want the audience to be completely turned off by her, mm-hmm. because the other thing is, why would all the other women in the show care about her and be friends with her if she really is just a horrible person? Mm-hmm. So the fine line is, how do I make her likable but stay true to the character?
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
And away we go.
Hello again, and welcome to the Art and Business of Community Theater, presented by the Monroe Community Players and featuring the Green Room Groupies. Each episode, we discuss issues relevant to the operation of successful theater and how to produce the highest quality shows for your audience. And we sometimes slip into other topics as well. You understand how the Green Room conversations sometimes go. We call those the tangent verse, though we haven't called it the tangent verse in a while. So we had to remind people it's a tangent verse. Mm-hmm. I am David War, the de facto leader of our little band. And looking around the Green Room today, I see...
That's comedy. Bob Yeoman.
Kathleen McBee.
Carol Slefka.
Okay, thank you. And welcome to the Green Room. Brian and Ron are not with us today.
We miss you.
We miss them both, but we're going to plow ahead anyway with what I think is an interesting topic. I think so, but I'm not sure if anyone else will.
I do, too. Find out. I'm so glad you came up with it.
Yes.
We haven't even heard of it
yet. It just came to me out of the blue. I was talking to someone one day about how they were working on their play, and it just came to me.
In a vision.
Yeah, Carol suggested it. But before we do that, let's dig into our mailbag, shall we?
It's bulging.
Yes. And we did get an email from one of our favorite groupies. You're all our favorites, but Patricia is one who's been more verbose lately. That doesn't sound good either. But she's been active. She's been catching up on everything we've been
engaged.
Doing. Engaged, which is what we love to hear from everybody. But Patricia Middleton, who is the art... We finally learned where she's from. And thank you, Patricia. She is the artistic director of the ACT Act Theater Company in Topeka, Kansas.
Oh.
It's pronounced, though, ACT, according to her, because it stands for All Communities Together.
Oh, nice.
So a shout-out to ACT Theater Company in Topeka, Kansas. But she asked a question of us.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay.
Hit me.
I'm ready.
Carol,
she says, I'm still working on catching up on your episodes. Can't remember what number it was. And just so you know, it was for episode 66, for those of you who want to go back and listen to episode 66 after this one. But I did want to comment on the segment about polling young people to see what plays they wanted to have produced. I was surprised that most of their suggestions were dismissed so quickly. Yes, Silent Sky is a historical piece, but it's easier to put on than a Disney musical. I know of several community theaters in my region that have put it on to rave reviews. And yes, of course, young adults are going to be drawn to angsty stories. Dear Evan Hansen, anyone? Because that's their experience in life. They don't want to be in the drama centered in a nursing home. Like most of us, they want to see or be in shows which they can relate. My two cents. Feel free to share if you would like. And yes, so my first impression was, I'm sorry, I didn't think we had dismissed them so quickly. But if that's the impression we gave, then that's obviously what we may have done. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm in agreement with most everything she says. That obviously, young people want to see stories that they can relate to them themselves.
All right.
And Silent Sky, I've been seeing that's playing, seems to be making the rounds right now, and again, to rave reviews. So I think it's one that everyone should look at. I haven't seen it myself, but it sounds like a good show.
And it was, you know, it started because I was looking for a show to direct and something that I wanted younger people into. And I guess part of it was that not only did it seem like it's something that, because it's a historical piece that the younger people would not necessarily be interested in being involved in, but it wasn't something that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. I was looking for something more current, more contemporary, more in terms of the timeline and the issues. And I have found what I think is a really great play. I'm hoping to put it on along with a couple other really good ones. But that was my concern. Not that the play... I didn't mean to dismiss it, but it was something that didn't appeal to me as a director.
And that's true, because, you know, play selection, it involves several things. One, it's something the audience, and as we discussed last episode, 72.
Yeah.
You know, do you do shows for what your audience wants or what audience you want right. to have?
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to do shows that your people want to do, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the issues we have right now is we need directors to come forward so that we can get that, you know, get some shows that they'd like to do. A lot of groups are still doing that. You know, they pick the shows, and then you apply to be the directors. That's a good position. That's the best position to be in.
Yeah.
To go from there. So that's something.
What was the show about?
It was, honestly, it was a historical piece about some astronomy type thing.
Okay. I really don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember the details of it. It's about a woman astronomer.
Yeah.
Who it's really just historically coming to light of her value and what she really contributed to the field of astronomy back in probably the late 1800s.
I was going to say 1890s, I think it was.
1890s, early 1900s.
Yeah. And just the topic itself just didn't appeal to me personally. Mm-hmm.
But you know, the times being what they were, she really didn't get the credit she deserved for her calculations and figuring and anticipating where certain things would be in the sky.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's one that we probably should take a read.
And it's playing in Royal Oak, I think.
Yes,
this
Stagecrafters
weekend?
Is doing
weekend?
It.
Yeah.
We had mentioned that earlier. I don't know if it was this weekend. And we're recording this, by the way, on May 6th, 2024. So if it's 2025, where you're listening to it now, the show's probably closed right
it's
now.
It's gone.
Yeah. But it's a show, I think, looking at. And frankly, speaking of theater for young people, last episode we talked about community theater resources on the web. And at the community theater resource page that the American Association of Community Theaters that they moderate, they had a show. They asked the same question: what kind of show? What's the shows people are doing that are getting best results now? And one show kept coming up, and I'm reading it myself now. I haven't looked at it yet. It's called Puffs, and it's based. It's an unauthorized Harry Potter.
Ooh!
So it's about what happens at Huff and Puff. While the Gryffindors and the Slytherins are doing their thing, what were the Huff and Puffs up to?
Is it fan fiction?
I think we call it fan fiction. And since it's unauthorized, my guess is it never actually mentions Harry Potter or Hogwarts or any of those things because they don't want to be sued by J.K. Rowling or anyone over at Warner Brothers and everybody who owns a piece of Harry Potter these days. But it's something that I thought, you know, take a look at because it seemed to be coming up quite a bit. And by the way, I'm going to give a shout out to that page. So folks, if you're on Facebook and you haven't checked out the Community Theater Resource page, you might want to do that. I'm going to put an unabashed plug. Let them know where you heard about the page from. we aren't allowed to advertise on there, but you know, if you say, "Oh, I heard about this on the Green Room Groupies podcast or the Art and Business Community Theater," you know, maybe we'll pick up a couple listeners too, because like everybody else out there, we're shamelessly plugging ourselves as well. But anyway, so that's where we are. I think, yeah, Patricia, you make good sense. Young people want to see things that, just like anybody, you want shows that you can relate to. So that's good. So I will make a promise. We will take a look at Silent Skies for sure, or Silent Sky.
Mm-hmm.
And if people got other show suggestions, we certainly are ready to help promote that if something that you think works well that other groups would like to do. So that's good. So titling this episode, An Actor Prepares, which I think should recognize from, I believe, Stanislavski's famous work. Maybe it's Uta Higgins, but it's a thing out there because one of the questions that came up that as Carol and I were talking was, how do you develop character? And I looked back at all the episodes we've done, and I don't think we ever just got to the nuts and bolts of how to develop character. We've talked about how to do comedy. We've talked about how to do drama. Mm-hmm. But we haven't talked about the most basic fundamental part of an actor, which is how do you develop your character from the script. So I thought that would be worth it. It just so happens that both Kathleen and Carol are in the same production right now of Steel Magnolias. Mm-hmm. And well, ladies, why don't you express some of the concerns you've had as you're working on developing your character?
Go ahead, Carol.
Well, I play Weezer, who is just this docile, sweet little... No, she's not. She's a crabby old lady. As my husband said, oh, so you're playing yourself. Uh-huh. But it's a very fine line to play a character who is basically a curmudgeon, but you want the audience to like her. You don't want the audience to be completely turned off by her, mm-hmm. because the other thing is, why would all the other women in the show care about her and be friends with her if she really is just a horrible person? Mm-hmm. So the fine line is, how do I make her likable but stay true to the character? Now, I was just telling Kathleen a minute ago that it's hard because in the movie, Shirley MacLaine played the part in the movie, and it's hard for me to get her out of my head. I feel like I need to follow her lead in a way and present the character the same way that Shirley MacLaine did. But then on the other hand, I don't know if I agree with some of the ways that she was presented. So I had to really stop and think, what is Weezer's issue? What is it? And what I've decided is that, so she says in the show that one of the lines is, I have more, the only reason anybody's nice to me is because I have more money than God. So between that and that she married the two most worthless men in the universe and had the three most ungrateful children ever conceived, tells me that she's not had a happy life, and not necessarily because of her. It's just maybe circumstances that she... There's another thing about how, as an old Southern woman, what she's expected to do. Mm-hmm. So I think she's trying to figure out how to toe the line, so to speak, in terms of who she is in the community. She's this, you know, wealthy person and whatever, but she's had a lot of heartache in her life, and so that has made her bitter, but I think the bitterness is coming from a place of hurt, not a place of meanness, mm-hmm. or of anger. Mm-hmm. I think she's just been hurt so much that it's a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to be ornery to you before you're mean to me. So you know what I'm saying.
Right, right.
So trying to figure out how to do that. I mean, there have been times where I'm sitting on the couch with the script and I say the same line like 15 different ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out which way is the best way to throw this character out. And so this has been on my mind the last few weeks, and that's why I brought it up to Dave, is just, I'm just having a really hard time figuring out who Weezer is.
Now, this is interesting to me, because it sounds to me you've done everything that you should do to develop the character. You've looked at the script. Mm-hmm. You found the clues that tell us about her past. Mm-hmm. You're figuring out what is her general frame of reference, which mm-hmm. in this case is to be unhappy because she's had difficulties in life. Though, what I think is also interesting, Weezer, money is not one of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because she doesn't have... It's not because... So she's able to take care of herself, I guess, is the way to put it. Mm-hmm. But you've already... It sounds to me like you've done the hard work. You know, to me, that's the basics of the character, is you got to look at the script, see what it says, and then I think... So the piece... I may be presumptuous here, but I think the piece you're missing is how... When you say, how would she react... Mm-hmm. I think what you want is, how would I react? See if that fits Weezer.
Yeah, yeah. And again, Kathleen and I were just talking. I think that the way I have been presenting Weezer has changed dramatically over the course of rehearsals. Mm-hmm. Because initially she was much crabbier. And then I just started thinking, yeah, but why? The thing I kept coming back to was, why do these other women like her if she's so horrible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she does have a line. These are the dearest friends I have in this town. And at one point, Clarice says that she was the maid of honor at her, that Weezer was the maid of honor at Clarice's wedding. So I'm thinking, well, so they have been friends since they were children, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
So I've been toning Weezer down quite a bit over the weeks just because, like I keep saying, it's I'm trying to find that line between her being this outerly bitter, horrible, cranky curmudgeon, but the vulnerability that she's hiding mm-hmm. inside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and again, where I would think, I'm going to start with your initial premise, though, that may have some flaws to it. You said you felt that you needed to present it somewhat like Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah.
And I would suggest to you that you don't.
Right. Yeah.
Because Shirley MacLaine is Shirley MacLaine. So you're at that point now.
Yeah.
Because Shirley MacLaine, she has different life experiences that she can bring to the character.
Right.
I think you need to delve into what can Carol bring?
Right.
And how do you see Weezer through Carol's lens, not Shirley's?
Yeah. Where that came from more than anything else was because the movie was so popular,
mm-hmm.
I didn't want people to come in and say, oh, well, that's not who Weezer is.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because they had a certain mindset from the way that Shirley MacLaine played her. Well, as time goes on, as I'm finding out, is not everyone is familiar with Steel Magnolias.
Not so much.
That relieved a lot of it from me because the expectation isn't there because a lot of people don't know the movie Steel Magnolias. Mm-hmm. I mean, people our age do. My age. But
my age.
Quite a bit older than Kathleen. But younger people have never heard of it.
Yep.
So that relieved a lot. But I felt like I had to be true to the film version a little bit just because that would meet the audience's expectations. But I'm realizing that's a false premise.
Yeah, and that's that. And I think that's something for every actor to kind of keep in mind. When I direct, at least, I know if someone comes in and they give me the beautiful impression of somebody who did something in a movie, it's not necessarily going to make me. That just tells me that you can do impressions.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, but I want an actor who can dig into the character, which frankly it sounds like you have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
And so to me, I think you're off. I know you've still got a couple weeks to go before mm-hmm. this production goes up, so you're feeling the pressure now. But I'm thinking you're right on where you need to be in your headset,
yeah,
or in your where your head is set.
Right, I knew what you meant. Yeah, and it's funny because I really identify with Weezer in a lot of ways. Mm. I mean, just some of the things that she says and things that are said about her, I can relate. So,
and I got to think that that's something that a trap a lot of actors can fall into is when they just read it the one time
mm-hmm.
and they say, oh, here are all the laughs and here's how she's, you know, they just say, okay, so Weezer's a crabby, grumpy old lady and they stop there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like I say, I to me, character development comes from reading it again, looking for the clues, figuring out why she says things the way she does, and mm-hmm. then saying, okay, how would I react to it? Now, am I reacting to it the way that this character would react to it? Because what if I had, you know, I don't have necessarily the same experiences, you know, what would I do if I had those same experiences?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and folks out there, you can correct me, but I think that's, you know, the so-called method. That was, you know, see things through your own filter
mm-hmm.
and bring it, and now you can apply it to the character in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's in any character that I've played, that's been a big part of it is figuring out what their motivation is. Like, why mm-hmm. do they keep going on day to day? What's important to them? What is, and I think that's necessary in order to really bring the character to life. Is that you have to understand why they do the things they do.
Yeah, and that's where the playwright is your friend, too.
Right.
Presuming, now, as a imagined playwright myself, you know, hopefully she or he has not done something just because.
Right.
Right.
And the same thing, frankly, to me, from the director's perspective, if someone's going over to pick up a piece of paper, they should have a reason they're going over to pick up the piece of paper.
Right.
Sometimes that reason is, oh, I need someone to look busy in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But the reality is, you're not making moves on stage. You're not thinking things that don't have some sort of reason. And a good playwright will kind of tie everything up. Here's why she did all these things. Mm-hmm. And here's why we come to where we come to. Weezer is frankly there partly for comic relief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But I, you know, she's probably a reflection of a person that the playwright Robert, I can't remember
his name.
Harling.
Yeah, Robert Harling knew.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. So.
Yeah, and I think Weezer sees herself as comic relief too.
Yeah.
I think that some of the things she says or does, she knows are going to just get a laugh or. People are going to roll their eyes or whatever.
Maybe that they're going to break the tension.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And maybe that's part of how she sees herself. She breaks that tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are those moments she does.
Yeah. She's been fun.
If I remember the script properly, there's big, deep, heavy moments, and suddenly here's Weezer with something weird.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hit me.
Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Clary, have you lost your mind?
Yeah. Droovy, call 911.
And then you're having, Kathleen, I think, similar issues because you feel that Droovy is so different from you.
Right,
so,
yeah.
So how are you preparing your character for someone who, you know, Carol's saying, well, I'm maybe more like Droovy than I think.
Weezer.
Weezer.
Yeah, that's okay.
But we don't see that. We only see the sweet, adorable you, Carol.
Of course.
Those are the first two words anybody uses for me.
So
what's your process, Kathleen?
I think the biggest thing when I found out I had this part was getting Dolly Parton out of my head. And that was... Mm-hmm. Basically came from my dad when I told him. He said, oh, you're playing Dolly Parton. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Dolly Parton and I are playing the same part. And if you think you're going to come see the show and see Dolly Parton, you're not. So, but yeah, my character is really very different than myself. So I'm finding it very fun and challenging to dive into it. But finding how to present her in the way that I think she should be presented. And I think a lot of that comes from feedback, too, from the director.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm trying different things or different movements or emphasizing a different word or my take on, like, in one part, I thought, well, maybe she's saying this, too, because she's so distracted she forgot to buy the coffee filters. And, you know, the director's take was, no, she's saying it to diffuse the situation. Took it a totally different way, and he's done that a couple times. And how I've interpreted it and how he wants it done is different. So I find that really interesting and challenging. But yeah, I think the hardest part is having to also not only be this character, but this character's doing hair and nails on stage, which I don't do either of those things. So it's added a whole new dynamic to not only knowing the lines, the accent, my blocking, and doing hair and nails. So, I think I started my character development even before audition. Mm-hmm. Because there was two parts I was looking at, Malin and Droovy. And so I wanted to make sure at the audition I presented them differently. That it didn't sound like I was doing the same thing for both of them. So I really started diving into the character even before actually getting to audition. And I know some people really like cold reads. I do not. I spend a lot of time looking at the character, and I love it when they tell you exactly what parts you're going to read ahead of time, because that's better for me than trying to do a cold read. But a lot of things that Carol's doing, I'm doing the, going through the same process, and I will do, just like you said, the same line over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I will emphasize a different word each time to say, okay, how does that sound different? And then I will circle it. Okay, here's the word I'm going to emphasize, or here's where I'm going to break.
Mm-hmm.
I always find it very interesting how much or how little character direction sometimes is
right
in the actual script. When you go and you see it and you see the whole story unfold and everything, and then one of those was Time Stand Still. Mm-hmm. That one had a lot of stuff, but then God of Carnage didn't. Very, very little clues about what the character was doing or feeling or even how to present that. And it really laid, I think that's why we had two people within our group, one that hated God of Carnage because they saw it done as a very serious show, and one where we did it with a lot of comedy. Same thing with Becky's New Car. The way we did it was with a lot of comedic side, whereas the Dearborn Actors Guild did it with a totally different take. And that's the beauty of live theater, yeah, and the interpretation of the director.
Well, and we see it in all entertainment, you know. That's why they keep making the same movie over and over and over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Star is Born.
Oh, my gosh. Heart,
you know, okay, well, because every director says I want to have something different, or every playwright in this case. So I think, though, that's the thing when you're developing the character. The playwright only really, the only clues he or she really is giving you is the words.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and because that's how we learn these characters is through what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And just like in real life, you don't know what the people are really thinking. So to find the subtext, you got to figure out what they're thinking before they say the line. And that, of course, is where the director comes in to help you and say, eh, are you sure that's what you're thinking here?
Mm-hmm.
Are you
mm-hmm.
sure? You know, what is that? I think what we call the subtext, you know, people, oh, shoot, I can't remember who said this quote, but there's a quote somewhere out there that says people don't come to see, they don't come to see the lines, they come to see the subtext.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember where I just heard that or saw that, and maybe mm-hmm. I'm making it up in my head, but people are coming to see what's going on inside.
Right, right. And they're all seeing it through a different filter, too.
Because yeah, anyone can get up there and just say the words.
Right. Yeah, definitely. But the interpretation of the audience, it's so funny. Different feedbacks I got from Becky's New Car, as a matter of fact, from totally different. So some people that saw Becky is totally a gold digger. Mm-hmm. She was only going after the money. And then other people that saw it in a different way. And my interpretation with the director was totally different from the very beginning. I still didn't totally agree with it, but I did what he said.
Well, and at some point, the director is the director.
The director is the director. Yeah. It's his show, their show.
Yeah. But, and if one day you're directing, you want that same kind of respect.
And I do want to give a shout out to Brian, because he's directing mm-hmm. the show, and he has been wonderful in letting us kind of play with it a little bit and see, you know, what would she do this or would she do that, instead of just saying, do it this way.
Right, right. Well, he did, and the last time he directed it was over 20 years ago. I don't think he remembered what he did.
Well, that could be. That could be. But you know how sometimes you work with a director who wants you to say something a certain way and you completely disagree with it, and they won't even say, well, you know, try it, we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But he's given us a lot of license to play.
He does.
And what's interesting, and I say this knowing that Brian is going to hear this, don't cut it. He has said that he wanted to direct this play because when he directed the first time, he was such a young director, he felt he made mistakes.
Oh.
And so he's out to kind of set it right.
Hmm.
So that's interesting, because now your director has an ulterior motive.
Ooh, interesting.
That you may not be aware of.
So I'm sorry if I gave it away.
Sorry, Brian. but that's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every person on that stage, every director, you all have different things as yourselves,
mm-hmm.
let alone with how you see the character.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that to me is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do, Dave? How do you get into the heart of a character?
Well, again, I start with the words.
Yeah.
And I ignore things like stage directions and stuff like that, which may have been worked on a stage somewhere in New York or wherever where it was first put on, but may mm-hmm. not work in our case.
Right.
And frankly, playwrights hate when I say this, I ignore a lot of what they tell me about the character.
Huh.
What does the character say about him or herself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, more important than what the... Because there are some playwrights that they'll give you paragraphs and this person's this and this and this and this and this and this. And it's like, then there's no evidence of that in the words mm-hmm. the character actually mm-hmm. says. It's like, play fair
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe I'm being harsh, but, you know, it's like, the audience doesn't know this paragraph that you gave me as an actor. The audience knows these words.
Right.
And if I can't present what you said here, and I'm using my hands, folks, sorry.
Yeah.
if I can't present what you said in this paragraph in the words you've given me, then the character isn't who you think it is.
Yeah. So it seems to me I heard once that you had mentioned once that you played Daddy Warbuck twice.
Daddy Warbuck twice
in Annie, I believe it was.
Yeah, which is interesting because, as I've said, I've played other characters more often.
Yeah.
But Daddy sticks with me.
Okay, or for any other characters that you've replayed.
So I should get a little bell. Ding, we're done.
Yeah. did you play the character in any repeats that you've had? Have you played the character differently from show to show? And why is that? Is that a director choice or is that you...
Well, part of the reason would be, so let's use Daddy as Warbucks is explained. One, between first time and the second time, I grown as an actor.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I have, you know, because you never stop learning, you always learn new techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I'm surrounded by different actors.
Yes.
Because even though I've been saying all about the words, other characters have words too, and how they choose to deliver their lines may impact how I deliver mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now let's face it, we all love Annie, mm-hmm. And her part's going to be delivered mostly the same as from show to show because that's Annie. But Grace, she might come in with a different context. You know, Roosevelt. Maybe you got someone who says, I'm not going to read it like FDR. I'm not just going to get up here and do an imitation. I'm going to come up with something different. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to react. You know, there's that saying that acting is reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be different because the people around you are different.
Mm-hmm. So you would say it's different than like if you were, say, I don't know, playing baseball or something, where you rely on muscle memory, you know, to do the same thing exactly the same way every time. So with a character, it's much more fluid.
Yes.
You're welcome, Ron.
You're welcome, Ron.
Good job, Carol. Okay.
She's going to get all our references in today.
I'm trying to think of what else. I haven't. I'm sorry. I'm still working on cats.
It would be catty to think elsewhere.
There you go.
So, Bob, what do you think in character development? Where do you start?
A drawing. I draw the character.
Really?
Well, Bob is an artist. So.
To start. Mm-hmm. And then go, what's on the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe I go with Carolyn when it... I do a little bit of the popular media. Everybody has got to see the Dorothy Gitch kick in The Wizard of Oz. You don't do the... Oh, we're off to see the wizard.
Mm-hmm.
People are just going to go, no.
Yeah.
That's not what we want. High School Musical.
Mm-hmm.
Everything had to be close to it because it's a little bit skimpy on the book. So that's with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A drawing. That's interesting.
Well, and a lot of what you say, you can come in and think one way of how you're going to present your character, and then how the characters around you are acting, and how you're going to react. That has influenced a lot as we've gone through.
And
rehearsals.
Also, those people on Broadway and in the movies, they've spent all this time, effort, and money developing the character before you.
Mm-hmm.
So why not use the information that they worked so hard for and bring that into it?
Yeah, I purposely did not go watch Steel Magnolias, the movie. I haven't seen it in a long time. I didn't watch any trailers, and I normally don't. Mm-hmm. Like when we did Doubt, I did not want to watch anything because I didn't want to be influenced... Because I know I'll pick up things and I'll like things and I'm like, ooh, I want to put that in there that way and present it that way. And I really like to just be able to put my own interpretation on it and then modify that as the director.
Well, and this is not a dig, but you're not Meryl Streep.
No. Well, I didn't play her anyways, but okay.
Yeah. But that's who played the role.
Right.
But, you know, for example, you're you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So why would we expect... shoot, who played the role in the movie?
Rue McClanahan?
No. Mm-hmm. This was Doubt, so Meryl Streep played the Mother Superior. I can't remember who played the... It was probably another big actress, mm-hmm. a famous actress. But it's a great movie, actually. I enjoyed it. Philip Seymour Hoffman played the father, as in the Reverend Father.
Do you want me to
look? Now we'll have to look it up. We'll have to do that. But anyway, but it is, again, you know, you're playing, you can only bring what you can bring to it. You can't. So, for example, in Steel Magnolias, with your character, you know, everyone says, oh, you're playing Dolly Parton.
Mm-hmm.
Love Dolly.
Yep.
One of America's treasures.
Yeah.
Great philanthropist.
Right.
I think she's doing all sorts of things, but the reality is, as an actress, I think she fails because everyone remembers in the movies, well, that's Dolly Parton.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No, you want to remember Truvy.
Right.
Right.
You know, a good actress, to me, gets lost. You know, one of the things I think that makes Meryl Streep Meryl Streep is when you see her in her movies, you forget she's Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's similar to, like, if you see Eddie Murphy in a movie, he's always Eddie the exact Murphy. Same character.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I've seen different things that Dan Aykroyd has done, and I'm, like, so impressed that the diversity that yeah. he can bring. And it was Amy Adams.
Amy Adams. I love Amy Adams.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. I don't know if I love Amy Adams. I love her work. I try to be conscious of that because it's like, oh, I love this. I don't know this person.
Mm-hmm.
I know their work,
mm-hmm.
and I do that. So, yeah. Though I was not as impressed with her Lois Lane, I'll have to admit. But you know, Enchanted, a few of the other things, she does a nice job.
Yeah. I have always tried to make a conscious effort not to go on YouTube and look for clips of community theater doing different things for the same thing. The only exception I made was when I was doing, when I was directing God of Carnage, I wasn't sure how to handle the vomiting scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I wonder what other people have done. So I looked up other ones just to see if I could get any ideas. I didn't use any of them. But in the meantime, when I was looking at some of the clips, I'm like, oh, no, that's all wrong. That's not how that character would act. Oh, no. That is not how they would say that. And I thought, why am I so arrogant to think that I know the best way to do it? But I think that's the secret of good character development is you have to be confident that you've got a handle on that character more than anybody else ever has.
Yes. You own the character.
You own the character. Yeah.
Using it.
And that's the struggle I've had with Weezer is that up until a few days ago, I haven't really felt like I knew her, like I really had her. And now I feel like I'm getting there.
Good.
I feel like I'm much closer to knowing her heart, assuming she has one. She does.
Protect
spoiler. She does. She does. Well, she does.
It's interesting you brought up YouTube because the only time I've ever gone to YouTube to look at what someone else has done
mm-hmm.
was, frankly, with Bench in the Sun that we did a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was some line, I can't remember what it was, but it's like, how did people... Am I not reading this right? I needed a clue to see how other people had mm-hmm. delivered the line. I can't remember mm-hmm. it now. And of course, I was disappointed because I went to YouTube and I couldn't find a single copy of Bench in the Sun because that would be wrong for people to record their
yes.
productions and put them on YouTube. That's our disclaimer.
Mm-hmm. But, thing that they
but I did find clips.
Yeah.
The reason to go on is for technical aspects.
Yeah.
As far as...
Oh, sure.
The Cinderella dress, the magic Cinderella dress that was popular for a couple seasons,
mm-hmm.
where it was basically she pulled one thread and the entire dress changed from mm-hmm. blue to gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or to see how someone else did the set.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The flying effect.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good, and again, go listen to...
It's a resource.
A little bit of 73. This is another social media thing that we didn't talk about YouTube at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff out on YouTube too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So character development, yeah, it's a complex thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully some folks out there got some clues from your experiences.
And, hopefully.
We'll see where we can go. But like I say, the director's role, I think, is an important one. And I'm glad to hear that Brian is letting you develop your characters by your, you know,
yeah.
with that input. It's I've been trying to figure out all episode how to get this joke in. It's
sometimes but it's like throwing it in the bathwater.
Yeah, well, it's like one of my favorite light bulb jokes. You know, how many directors does it take to change a light bulb? I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, that's good.
The director should be kind of doing that.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Never answer a question.
Well, I'll have to give you the accountant phrase on that one. So guy goes in for an interview and the guy asks him, what's 2 + 2? And the accountant says, what do you want it to be?
What answer do
you want
it to be? Yeah, so, but no, character development, you know, it is the most basic.
Yeah.
But it is among the most basic.
Right.
And I think
part of a craft.
Even I think it's a continuation too.
Yeah.
Because we only did Becky's new car for one weekend, and I know I would have done things differently. There were things I wanted to tweak. There were things I tweaked from every performance, especially once you get that audience feedback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it starts to solidify. I remember when we did, we didn't do it. I was up at in Wyandotte when we did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always backstage on book. I had a very little part, so I just kind of played stage manager because that's me, little control freak. But there was one line in there that I told the one guy, I said, you're going to get a laugh on this. And he didn't get one laugh any of the nights. We did it for 2 weekends. Never got a laugh on that line. And I was like, what did I miss? I mean, I think that line's hysterical. No one ever laughed at that line. And it was just the weirdest thing. So it's when it actually goes live, it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me of, I remember this so well. When my daughter was growing up, she was very involved with theater. And she was, I think in first grade, they did Sound of Music, and she was Gretel. She couldn't read, you know, but she memorized the entire script. That's another story. But anyway, there was this one scene, and I, of course, because she was six, I was with her at every rehearsal. It was at the high school. It wasn't a youth thing. It was the high school production. And there was this one scene when Maria's left and whatever. And the first time I saw the show live, the line that she delivered, the whole audience went, oh, and it startled her to the point where she completely lost her focus because it had never, you know, in rehearsal, you hear the line so many times. Uh-huh. So I've always been very cognizant of that. It's like, okay, at what point am I going to have to either wait for a reaction or do something a little differently to get that reaction?
Yes.
So, but yeah, that can really throw you off. But yeah, I've had lines too where I think, oh, this is so funny, and nobody laughs. I'm like, I want to look out and say, should I say it again? Did you not get it? I mean, this is really funny.
Were your hearing aids on?
Yeah, yeah. I said, yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, going full circle back to Steel Magnolias, I am concerned about, are we going to, because we're so in our heads about getting through these very wordy scenes, mm-hmm. I don't want to run over the laughter. I want to make sure the audience feels comfortable to laugh, that we allow ourselves the time in our character development and timing to allow them to laugh, because if you cut them off right at the beginning, you'll lose that for the whole show. Because they don't want to miss anything.
Right.
You know, and so it's tricky.
And I'll tell you, after the mics are off, the one line that I say that I'm expecting a laugh, mm-hmm. and so I have found it's the first part of a paragraph that I say. So I am inventing some busy work, anticipating that I'm going to have to stop there, mm-hmm. and I don't want to just stand there, you know, stupidly looking. Mm. So, yeah. So, that was a good look. So, I've invented some busy work for that space. So, now if nobody laughs, I'm going to just be doing my thing. And yeah. It's like, what? But anyway, so yeah, that is part of it too.
Stop moving this chair.
I know. The squeaking is. All the squeaking you've been hearing, people, it's Dave. It's
Dave.
All Dave. It's not us, chair. But I think that's part of character development too, mm-hmm. is being able to anticipate how you're going to have to pace certain things that your character says in order that you don't either lose the rest of what you're saying or create an awkward pause for the right. next person.
Right.
When you don't want to go too fast. You don't want to go too slow.
And right. I realize now after Becky's new car, there's a scene in Becky's new car where she actually takes off her, you know, mom garb and she's got this, you know, this cocktail dress on. And I actually undressed right on stage, and I realized while I'm presenting lines that nobody was listening to anything I was saying as I was undressing, because the people I brought up into the audience and gave them the choice of what to do based on all this, they had no clue. They just looked at me and like, what? So I would have totally changed how I delivered that after the live performances, because that's when I knew they're just watching. They weren't hearing anything, or I was either presenting it too quickly, and so there's a lot of things you gain through the actual live performance.
Well, I think you've all recalled me telling the story of having a discussion with a professional actress, Sue Felder, who's out there in Chicago somewhere. I think she's a professor now, actually. So, hi, Sue. Hopefully, she listens.
Hopefully,
we had a conversation once after a play. And she said, I don't know how you do it. I said, what? She says, how do you get into character for just one or two weekends? Mm-hmm. I said, I don't know how you do it, living with a character for weeks and weeks and weeks. But she felt that very strongly that you didn't really learn the character until you lived with the character in front of that audience for several weeks.
Right, right.
You know, several performances. So I don't know what her cutoff really would have been. But she thought one weekend that we traditionally do was just too short of time.
Mm-hmm. I think I've even found in preparing for a show that I will start answering questions at work or to my husband or to my family at the time in my character. That I get that much into my character that, you know, I'm thinking about how they would respond to things in my life if they were, you know, just to really, and I think that's how you see really good characters that come across, you know, even on film, is that the actor is told, wasn't it said that, like, for over a year, the person that played Elvis in the Elvis movie just studied, I don't even remember who that actor was, but the movie Elvis that just came out, he had studied that role for over a year before they even actually started filming to try and get into character.
Yeah. Well,
I know I find myself these days talking with a southern accent a little bit.
I'm trying not to do that.
Yes, be careful. You never know who's really out there that may say,
and I'm sure
why
I have
are you making fun of me?
Yeah, I have no authenticity in the accent. It's just whatever I think I should do.
I know. I lead exercise at the senior center, and they keep asking me, well, give us your southern accent. And I said, nope, you got to come to the show. And I'm trying not to make sure I don't slip into it. One, two, three.
Okay, well, looks like we got to get you folks off to rehearsal.
Yes.
Speaking of this, but thank you so much for your insights into character development. Hopefully, like I said earlier, that's something that everybody out there can use. We noticed that we have been a little negligent of talking about the art of theater lately, so we're going to try to add more of that into our regular rotation here, because, you know, all of us tend to be on boards and stuff, so we get a little caught up in the nuts and bolts of, gosh, how do you get the audience in? How do you do a program or whatever?
How do you stay afloat?
But it's fun just to talk about, you know, how do we do what we do and what we love to do. So, as usual, I'd like to thank each and every one of you out there for your listening time and taking the time to find us and to listen to us. We appreciate the support that you not only give to us, but that you give to keeping theater alive in your communities. We appreciate feedback and conversation from you, so you be sure to visit our Facebook page for more fun. Just search for Monroe Community Players or Green Room Groupies. You can find us, as we discovered last episode, you can find us right away just by searching for that on Facebook. Emails may be sent to the mcppodcast@monroecommunityplayers.org. And to keep up with the latest shows and activities of the Monroe Community Players in Monroe, Michigan, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. We generally release two episodes a month. Please take a moment to subscribe, like, otherwise rate us. Help spread the word that we are here. We want to keep the Green Room Groupies Nation growing, and you know, we have a goal to have a listener in every state at least. The Arts and Business of Community Theater is presented by the Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe County Library's Ellis Branch and Reference Center. in their new podcast studio overlooking historic River Raisin in Monroe, Michigan. Though technically, I think we're in Raisinville Township, but hey,
close enough.
Monroe County still.
We're there.
Yeah.
So once again, for the love of theater, we are the Groupies, and we will see you next time
in the green room.
There we go.
Yay for us.
I'm supposed to say Monroe.
No. Oh, Monroe. Like in Steel Magnolias.
That's how they say it down in Mississippi.
Is that Louisiana. Yes.
Yeah, I'm turning this off now.
Okay. Please do.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, goodbye. And don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven.